In this podcast, I'm going to wrap up the topic of comets. Comets are basically icebergs which orbit from Jupiter, Neptune in a elliptical orbit and graze the Sun. They can orbit from as much as one light year out from space in the Oort belt. And I've been talking about them for a while. I've read a book and looked at the naming of comets. I've looked at the actual scientific blueprints of comets, and I've began to talk about the structure of comet, adding a bit of my knowledge of shockwaves and chemistry, plasma physics, understanding and teaching in the classroom to actually build some more pictures up. So whereas the ancients looked up at the comet and saw a hairy ball, which is the origin of the word coma, or the Chinese saw the actual wisps of the tail and the coma and perhaps the anti-tail and saw a broom, and they called it a broom star. I hope that when you look up at a comet, you'll start to think of some of the science that you've learnt. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. And the story is that I'm just improving my podcast wares as I get ready to rehabilitate from a heart operation. And as it happens, I just have to set myself the challenge of doing a podcast with little preparation. And also, as it happens, I get interrupted from time to time. So the last time I was really into the colours of comets, getting towards the end of my discussion of comets, when I was interrupted just at the very end. So the colours of comets, let's actually go part colour, part colour. So you go for the nucleus, which is sort of like a roast potato, a charred potato or a charred iceberg, going from several hundred metres to up to 10 kilometres across for a big one. 10 kilometres across is a large amount of a large amount of water. That's more than Sydney Harbour. It's a fairly large iceberg going through. And then as it heats up, as it goes towards the Sun, it forms geysers. We can actually look at it, geysers as it's called. We can actually look at it from ground-based telescopes with appropriate filters and see these geysers go out at different angles. And they go out and form the atmosphere of a comet called the coma. And this coma is shaped by a shockwave, a bow shockwave, very much like a punt going down a canal, or your rubber duck being pulled across your bath. You'll see this shockwave where there's a sudden drop-off of density, and this is where it encounters the solar wind. The solar wind is something to marvel at. It sort of really defines the sort of the fishbowl solar system we live in. It sort of blows out the intergalactic dust and the formation of the solar wind, the building of the solar wind, the trade of the solar wind. It actually burns through the dust or low temperature layer which would encase our Sun and exposes our naked Sun in front of us. And you have different grades of solar wind interacting to form, again, shockwaves. So it's shockwaves everywhere. And the spiral shockwaves are something to really marvel at. So we've got the coma, the black nucleus. The coma can be green or cyan. Green if it's got carbon dimers, that's carbon atom bonded to another carbon atom. And there's a bond associated with it. If you imagine two baubles on a spring, it will tend to oscillate around a mean radius. And similar for carbon and nitrogen. Carbon and nitrogen is a cyanide. That's cyanide. So this is in the coma. And these gases literally fluoresce with UV light, so we're told. Similar to a black light disco where you actually see things glow. So this glow. So a comet, when you look up, the sky can be white if it's dominated by smoke. But if it's got a lot of gas in it, it will actually glow a brilliant green or a bluey green. Now, your eyesight at night is black and white eyesight, so you don't seem to see colours so intensely. You'll tend to just get a black and white vision. Your night vision is black and white, but through the lens of a camera, which intensifies the light, and you've got colour sensitive film, you'll see a definite clear green glow. And of course, the ancients who are much more attuned to this could see the colours of comets. So they'd have different colours of comets, different colours of tails. And we've now got through the coma. And you can see, if you know the physics of a shockwave, a bow or conical shockwave, a bit like the nose of the space shuttle is to be a supersonic shockwave. Inside that, you've got intensity of build-up of gas just at the shock region. And when I say build-up of gas, you get photodissociation. That is light coming in and breaking apart a molecule. So you've got an organic molecule which comes up, say ethane, and a piece of UV light comes in, hits the ethane molecule, and it breaks it off to a ethane ion, I suppose, or ethane without a hydrogen. It just knocks it off. So eventually you just trim until you're left with C2. So this C2 doesn't come off the surface of the comet. It comes out of the comet and gets baked and cooked up there. At least that's what I expect is happening. A photodissociation is rather great because you can have any UV light that you like. It can be the wrong wavelength for a resonance. That is, normally for light to be absorbed by a molecule, it's got to be at the exact frequency of vibration. It goes into the exact frequency of vibration, hangs around enough, and that molecule can decide to radiate at different points. But if it breaks apart, it can be any old frequency, and because it will break apart, it can partition the energy into the molecule and the part given apart, and so you've got a absorption, a continuum absorption. So when all this sort of is said and done, this causes it to glow green, a bit like fluorescent pen marker under ultraviolet light. It will glow. The next part is the iron tail, which I want to talk about, and the iron tail points in a line from the centre of the sun directly out to the edge of the universe. People talk about the iron tail being detached magnetic field lines. And this is, I suppose, from my point of view, a real confusion about magnetic field lines. When plasma interacts with itself and prevailing magnetic field lines, it orbits, goes around a magnetic field line in a spiral and actually creates its own, redirects that magnetic field line. So you can't actually just bend a magnetic field line. You have to have an interactive plasma which has got currents flowing around, and the currents generated reshape the field lines. So this part of the iron tail has got carbon monoxide. It's this characteristic eerie blue colour. Again, this is hard to see at night against if there's any scattering at night to see it. It's a much fainter one, but it's the same process again of ultraviolet light going through it. And these detached field lines are really plasma waves, I suppose to speak, spiral plasma waves. Plasma wave generates magnetic field, which catches the plasma in a container, a bottle, so to speak, a weak plasma bottle. And an example of plasma being caught in a bottle or a containment is lightning. Lightning is contained plasma. The current is so intense that it creates a circular magnetic field, which pinches it down and acts as a lens, so to speak, to actually keep the current going down. It actually will get a spark going through. So if you like, it's a very weak lightning bolt coming up. Now, if you have and it's been energized and directed by the solar wind. The stable endpoint of the solar wind is picking up energy from the solar wind, which means that the energy is minimized when it's pointing away from the solar wind. So you could say the solar wind is pushing the tail, but it's a bit more complex than that. Now, photographing of this, or time-lapse photography, gives a brilliant insight into this. So I think it's a Lovejoy, the planet Lovejoy, the comet Lovejoy. Lovejoy is an Aussie out in the Australian outback, sort of with beautiful clear skies, and we get relatively clear skies out here in the Blue Mountains. Not so much here at Glenbrook. Glenbrook's relatively protected, but further up the Blue Mountains, we have these beautiful cliffs and super dark valleys, beautiful night skies, nothing to compare to the night skies in the Australian deserts. And I often remember going, I think it was in the old US Army Huey or Iroquois helicopters at night, we'd go over the desert at fairly high altitude, and there'd be dim instrument lights, and you'd look out and there would be absolutely brilliant Milky Way. So we've got the night skies, so you can see this, you can see the tail in the dark skies, and with this is the Iron Tail. This is this stick up Iron Tail, and the important thing here is that these form a line away, and you could say the wind is interacting with the plasma, which means that the overall stable point is pointing away from the sun. Now, what happens is that if this it hits another shock wave of the solar wind, so the solar wind can actually have not just a uniform blowing, it can actually have gusts in it as shock waves come through. So often if you feel a gust of wind, can be a shock wave that you feel. If you suddenly feel a gust of wind, you can feel a shock wave. So if it gusts, you can actually break up the tail, and the tail can detach. You can see the detaching shock wave going up. It's a beautiful thing to see. Now, we've got some curious things happening here. The C2 stays inside that coma. C, the carbon diamond molecules stay, and the carbon nitrogen stay inside that coma, and it doesn't actually get sucked up into the Iron Tail. And so there's some sort of process there in which carbon monoxide gets bled out of the coma and goes into the carbon tail, whereas the C2, something else happens to that, and it either hangs around or it must eventually stick to the smoke or do something. It doesn't go out there, otherwise we'd see some greenish hues in that tail. So that leaves two other features for me to wrap up this story about. You've got the nucleus, which is bound to the orbit. You've got the coma, which just goes up and has a bow wave pointing in towards the sun, always in towards the sun, because that's the direction of the solar wind. The solar wind doesn't follow the magnetic field lines. The solar wind is basically a all directions plasma cannon being fired off from the sun, and the plasma cannon is energized by magnetic field vibrations caused by the sheer force of the internal solid section of the sun shearing against the solar atmosphere, which is the convective zone. So you have that effect. So if you, this is again the orientation, and sticking back from the bow of the coma is is the Iron Tail, which goes in the direction of the solar wind, going along with being pushed back into a slower orbit and then trailing behind as it's approaching the sun, or being pushed ahead and going in advance of the orbit, you have the dust tail, and the dust tail can then actually curve up and around. It can follow the curve of the orbit, or it can actually receive several points. Now, that dust tail is something, again, to observe. The dust tail can be formed inside the coma, and actually have the width of the coma coming out in some comets. You can see it's got the overall width, or it can be actually confined into a jet, a tubular jet, which goes several nuclei diameter, but comes out from the back of the coma. As it comes back from the coma, this tube of dust ablates or loses a surface layer of dust. This is an amazing thing to see. So you've got that central tube coming out, and layers of dust start to erupt from the surface, and it sort of erupts at a point, an eruption point, and this forms a cone of dust, a shockwave cone of dust coming out. And seen from the side, that's, you can see the dust increase on this surface at the top and the bottom. And so this is sort of above and below little brush strokes. Now, seen in two dimensions, you can think, oh, this is just a line of dust, but it's actually a surface. You're seeing through a veil and seeing the surface. If it was actually a line of dust, that you'd see it cross, these lines cross the central point, or you'd see it move at a funny angle. You can actually see this. There's a huge dynamic and beauty to it. So this is, I suppose, a few mysteries for me. I don't know why the C2 is confined to the coma and doesn't get into the iron tail, and why the ions in the iron tail are carbon monoxide, and you don't see too much of that glowing on the inside. Then you've got a huge amount of dynamics going in here. Well, the thing that I mentioned is that your iron cross section dramatically changes once this is your solar wind cross section of the solar wind dramatically increases once you get the light becomes excited, and this is sort of like a another shock phenomena, but basically in the chemical equations which say that once you have a shock, the susceptibility to the shock increases. So if you hit something, it bruises, so to speak. It's sort of like you're all okay, but if someone punches you, you bruise, and then you're more susceptible to the next punch. The punches hurt a lot more. So there's a lot more going up in the comet, and if you like, we've got this historical narrative of the comet, which is obviously like a huge cartoon pasted on the big screen. So we had plasma TVs. We have plasma TVs and big screen OLEDs. In the ancients had the sky, this huge, huge big screen, and suddenly this comic would appear. This comic, when I say like a two-dimensional drawing, would appear, and this would be obviously a sign from the gods. And so that's led us down a path of descriptive and historical stories. So the fact that our forefathers, or four people, to be more politically correct, said this meant something, and it interacted with history. There's so much draw to discuss the social beliefs here. But what's happened quietly is that in the school laboratories, we've begun to show people plasma shockwaves. In the labs, we've shown you the shockwave of just simple water hitting a plate and seeing like that, and start to point things around in every day. And that's sort of a different space of basic gentle observation, gentle science teaching. And if we can gather that together and then point up into the sky, perhaps people of future generations will start to not directly tell the children, but have conversations amongst themselves discussing it, and they'll listen into, and we'll eventually move on to our next stage of a more scientific belief. And I can say it doesn't mean that if you have this understanding framework, which I haven't read so far, but if you do have this understanding framework, it makes the area more interesting. You tend to look at different pictures of comets, look at footage of comets, and you start to, when you see something, you see it in two dimension, it builds a three-dimensional picture in your head of what's going on, and hopefully that's something that we're going to pass to our children, rather than what's been passed to our children previously. This is a comet, that's God, and they've said that the king is going to die, or we're going to have a plague, and then a king dies, or plague, or this, and then one of those three happens. Okay, that's what that meant. That type of stuff, that sort of a reactive diagnosis. So that concludes over many podcasts, more podcasts than I would like to mention, my discussion of comets. And I'll certainly look out for it. And so I hope that some people have found this interesting, and it has rested with me to the limits of my knowledge and questions that I do have. This is to do with how these fantastic mechanisms actually really, really work. And, you know, what's the maths of them? And what's the reason for the distinct colours, meaning distinct chemicals, meaning going into the distinct areas of the comet? There must be something going in there. And that represents more a scientific endpoint, where you have a degree of explanation and some questions going forward. So in the meantime, keep on doing science.